we can go through almost everything on the agenda. We'll have to skip things that we would normally vote on because we do not have quorum. If JJ magically appears by my wishing it so, then we can alter again. So it's 4:42. I'm going to call the meeting to order. This is the Ethics Commission meeting, and it is Wednesday, August 31st. Let's say the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay. So next thing on the agenda is confirming quorum, which is a fail. But we do have one of our members on the telephone, LaTanya, and she has asked for consideration of extraordinary circumstances for not being physically present here today. And so I'm going to ask...
Which you would need a quorum to vote
on. Oh, no! We have to vote on that.
Correct.
So does that mean LaTanya can listen, but she can't vote because we're not voting on anything?
That's correct.
Oh, I got myself all confused.
Yeah, and just to clarify for the record and anyone that may listen to the tape, you have identified that you have a lack of quorum. If everyone can go around and introduce themselves, we'll identify how many we have. And because we are one person shy of the quorum, there will be, as Chair Schmidt stated, no official action taken by the commission. But the Sunshine Law does permit you all to engage in a workshop where you just receive essentially information.
Perfect. All right. So I almost had you in there on false pretenses, LaTanya, but we're happy to have you. Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Excellent. And so to Kirby's point, for the benefit of the minutes, LaTanya, why don't you go first and introduce yourself, and then we'll go around the room.
Yes. LaTanya Lipscomb-Smith, Ethics Commissioner.
Excellent. And Andrea, I can't see you behind the podium, but I know you're there, so you can go next.
Andrea Myers, Ethics Office.
Thank you.
Carla Miller, Ethics Office.
Kirby Oberdorfer, Ethics Director.
Eric Freiberger, Ethics Commission Member.
Mary Glenn Love, Ethics Commission Member.
And Ellen Schmidt, Chair.
Darcy Gowner, Ethics Commission Member.
Cherry Pollack, Office of General Counsel.
Sandy Homrickhouse, Ethics Office.
Thank you. That brings us to the ethics thought. Kirby, will you share a thought with us today?
I shall, and I have actually an update for you from JJ. I just received a response that she's leaving the city of Clearwater, so she won't be home for another 4 hours, and she has beautiful weather where she is.
Okay. And even if she wanted to join us by telephone, it's not going to solve our quorum problem because we can't vote to let her and
correct.
Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Okay.
I don't blame her, though. If the weather is beautiful there, I don't blame her.
Turn around and go back.
Yes.
Okay, so I do have an ethics thought for you today that comes from Henry David Thoreau. It says, "Do not be too moral. You may cheat yourself out of much life so. Aim above morality. Be not simply good, be good for something."
Oh, be good for something. I like that, Kirby. So if you're paying attention to the agenda, next up is minutes approval, and that's a fail because we can't vote on any of the minutes. So we're just going to skip that part of the agenda for right now. Feel free to review them. I reviewed them earlier today. And we'll go ahead and table those for next meeting. But we can do our reports. So our first report is from the Ethics Office, and that's also Kirby.
Thank you so much. So I've tried to group my report into the five general areas of work that the office does. So the first category is administrative. And as you all are aware, there is a vacancy in the Ethics Attorney 2 position. Mm-hmm. That we had approved in the budget last year, and we have posted for that position. 15 candidates applied, 10 were preliminarily eligible, 8 tested. And so the next step is for us in the office and employee services to sit down and grade the exams. And then from there, there will be a short list of candidates based on those that receive a passing score on the exam. And we will keep you posted when that happens and what the interview schedule may be.
Mm-hmm. I'll participate in those interviews again at some point?
Yeah, that would be wonderful. We'd love to have somebody from the commission participate. The next thing is we did do our budget presentation before the Mayor's Budget Review Committee and Finance Committee, and I'm going to get into the details of the actual budget later on in the budget presentation, but that was another activity we've been engaged in this summer. And also, we had a pretty extensive media public records request for all of the cases decided by the Commission in the last 18 months.
Dang.
And it was 20-something cases. And so the reporter requested specifically records for four of those particular cases and then said that they would let me know from there. And I haven't heard back. I followed up several times and I have not heard back. So that request came in early July, I think, end of June, early July, and was completed by the end of July. But it took a substantial amount of office time and staff and resources, and we did not charge for the records for the first four cases. But I did advise that going forward, because of the amount of time and resource it was taking, we would have to do a invoice for potential charges that are authorized by the law.
Mm-hmm.
So,
media outlet?
Action News. Okay. Under advice, I wanted you to know that over the past year, we have given over 500-plus pieces of advice on various topics, and currently we're working on 12 pending conflicts of interest. And trainings, last year we completed 54 trainings of approximately 1,000 people, city officials, employees, board members, volunteers, you name it, we train them. And Carla is going to tell you about an exciting training initiative.
Ooh.
We just finished redoing a manual for all elected officials in the city. Mm-hmm. And this is fresh off the printing presses right now. And it really is nicely done, I think. And it gives them a complete orientation on the law. And so we'll make sure that you all get a copy of it when we get more printed up. But we've done that.
Yeah. Thank
and
you.
Can I say one other thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
We have another event next Tuesday and Wednesday that I'm inviting everybody to. Mm-hmm. If you want to come, we have an international delegation coming from Africa, and they're going to be studying good governance, and we have a section on citizen involvement in good government. And Dr. Candler, who used to be on the commission, is going to be coming, and they all speak Portuguese. And Dr. Candler has done some of his academic work in Portuguese, and so I thought, you know, he could at least say hello to him and converse with him. But if any of you want to work with this international group, just let me know, and I'll give you the details.
I had the opportunity to sit on one of those before, and it was really good.
They're interesting.
They were interesting.
Some of the notable trainings we've done as of late in the last couple of months since the commission last met. On June 27th, we trained city council members, their ECAs, and other elected officials from the beaches. On July 28th, Andrea trained the neighborhood community attendants. So those are citizens that belong to homeowners associations, and they get all kinds of information. And Andrea trained them specifically on Robert's Rules of Order. On August 24th, Andrea and Carla did a great presentation and training to the Duval County Public Schools ITN Committee for their solicitation for their new headquarters on Sunshine Law and Public Records. On Thursday the 25th, we trained the JTA board and executive team. Tomorrow I will train our newest council member-elect, Clark Murray. She is replacing council member Dennis, and she comes into office. She gets the oath on Friday, but I'm going to train her tomorrow. Additionally, we have requested trainings from our JFRD, the Management and Executive Team, and the Office of General Counsel Government Operations section. And finally, this fall, we will be concentrating on requested trainings that were requested in IG reports for the Public Works employees, a letter to vendors on the prohibitions on giving gifts to city employees and officials, and also training for all employees who handle contracts to try to address some of the issues and the IG reports that were issued. In the compliance bucket for the office, we had three major initiatives. We staffed the Post-Employment Appeals Committee, which reviews requests of waivers of Section 602.412 in the Ethics Code, the post-employment restrictions that essentially say if you were an employee of the city and you had direct and substantial involvement in a contract of over $250,000, you cannot go to work for that vendor unless you get a waiver from this committee. So this committee meets on an ad hoc as requested basis. This is the fifth request since 2018, and the committee is comprised of the chair of the Ethics Commission. So if you're thinking about being chair next year of the commission, note that that's an extra duty you have. The chair of the City Council Rules Committee, and also the chief of procurement. Mm-hmm. Those are the three members of the committee, and they hear the waivers, and they granted the waiver request last Friday to a former employee from JTA that went to work for an engineering vendor mm-hmm. that does work with JTA.
Gently remind me, the prohibition is against getting employment within 2 years of leaving the city, is that correct?
Yes, within 2 years of either leaving the city or the completion of the contract. Also under compliance, our office recently finished drafting an affidavit that's required by the new section 602.413. If you'll recall, that's the section that applies to city council members who are employed by nonprofits that are receiving city grant funding. And they're required to fill out an affidavit and a disclosure for that funding. And so we recently completed it, and OGC is also taking a look at it. And as soon as it's finalized, it'll be sent to council members in the near short term. And lastly, our office tracks compliance with financial disclosure filing of over 100 people in the city. And I'm happy to report that as of today, we are 100% compliant. Woo-hoo. In the city. So that's no small feat. And lastly, we also, as you know, staff the Ethics Commission work and assist you in the work that you, the great work that you do, and that'll be covered in some of the reports coming.
Thank you, Kirby. Anybody have any questions for Kirby about her report? Kirby, you said that you were going over the five areas that you work on. One was advice, one was education. Tell me all of them.
Yeah, these are the main buckets that we categorize things in the office. So administrative, advice, trainings, compliance, and ethics commission.
Thank you. Thank you. Next up, we're going to hear from Cherry. Do you have a report for us from your office?
No report. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we're going to have our committee reports. We can have committee reports because we don't vote on those. So let me ask Darcy, will you give the Complaints Committee report?
It's short. We have one pending case.
Thank you. Don't you like a short and sweet report? Mm-hmm. Okay. Internal operations. Mary Blaine, will you give us your report?
Sure. So looking at the minutes that we're not going to approve, what had informed you about the charge we received from our chair lady to draft proposed changes to commission attendees who want to appear by the communications media technology, otherwise known as Zoom. And so we met, and I want to say that everyone came.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And everyone worked very hard, effectively and efficiently, and we came up, I think, with a good plan to propose to you when the time comes to vote. The purpose then of this report is just to give you the basic outline. I had asked in preparation for this meeting that our able staff collect other examples of internal operating procedures that handled online attendance. And they graciously did that. They gave us a large amount of information about how other agencies here in the city and around are doing it. So we really already had a good basis to work with. Looking at the internal operating procedures that's in your packet, mm-hmm. you'll see that all of the underlined information is what we've added to what we pretty much already had. And the key point of all of this is that we need to have an in-person physical appearance by at least 5 members to have a quorum. And once we know we have that, or we're pretty sure we're going to get it, someone within 24 hours can apply to the commission and say, I have an excusable event. that I would like to have the commission, in effect, approve me to appear online. And you'll see they're all real logical. I mean, COVID gets its own little category right now. And then we have other health-related issues. We have military duty or deployment. We have extraordinary family obligation, unforeseen mandatory business obligation, or previously scheduled unavoidable conflicts. I think you can see the logic of all of those. We are not asking people to necessarily give us all the details. You know, we trust people and everyone's ethical here. You'll also see in these provisions under AC, we've left ourselves with the discretion so that if something unique and not covered by the other six provisions comes up, we can deal with it. Notice, too, that these 24 hours apply for pretty much a regular meeting. If we're having a shade meeting, we need 48 hours, we think, and so we're suggesting that. And the reason for that, we have a respondent that's going to be involved in this. And so we want to be sure that we have the extra time to let extra people know. It's not going to just be the commission members who will have to make that decision and be aware that we'll be proceeding with some people, potentially one or more, online. And that's just as a courtesy that we thought would be justified. And, you know, you'll notice, too, that there's always going to be some event that may be within 24 hours. I can imagine that, you know, babies don't come on time. Mm-hmm. People don't always get sick on time. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason why we wanted to have the discretion available to us. That's pretty much it. I think you can read how it's set out. If you want a little more really extraordinary detail, you can look at the draft of the minutes where we actually went kind of hammer and tongs through each part of it. But I would suggest you just look at the proposal because it's very neatly set out by Cherry and Herbie and all of their helpers. And that is my report.
Thank you.
We'll propose it and recommend it.
Thank you. I appreciate all of this good hard work by the team, and I think this will prepare us well for future occurrences where this comes up. I had a thought about this shade meeting section that I feel compelled to mention now, although we can't do anything about it or in the moment, which is I made this kind of up during some of our shade meetings when we did have people call in, and I had the person on the phone swear or affirm that they were protecting the privacy of the session because, of course, we don't know who else could possibly be hearing. And so that's just something I have done when this has come up, and it has been a shade meeting, I think, for the comfort of the respondent. So I don't know if that's just something that we can direct the chair to continue to do, or if it might bear merit being included as like a subset of D. So I just put it out there for you to ponder. Maybe I should be more humble and say, if you guys think that's still a good idea, it felt like the right thing to do in the moment when it first came up with the first shade meeting.
The only thing that I would add to that is I think that is an important component to have, whether you memorialize it in your internal operating procedures or not, is a policy decision to be made by you all. But that's certainly a necessary component, I think, to allowing somebody to attend remotely in a shade meeting, because if anybody else were to hear that, it would waive the confidentiality in Florida statutes. And so you want to make sure that you're doing everything humanly possible to protect that confidentiality that exists until such time as the commission makes a determination on the case.
Well, we can look at it. I don't have in front of me the other obligations of attending the shade meeting. If people think they need to do that, I'm happy to look at it and ask the committee to look at it.
I
already know that we're supposed to keep shade meetings confidential, so.
Yeah, that's kind of why I was in conflict about whether it needs to be to steal Kirby's word, memorialized in it, or if it's something we could just habituate the chair to remember.
Yeah, I would think you could just have the chair, make sure that the chair does it. I don't think you really need to memorialize it.
Well, I think what you can always do at the beginning of a shade meeting is whoever's running the meeting can announce the purpose of it, the confidentiality of it.
Correct.
And remind anyone who has a doubt about it, a thought about it, it applies to everyone attending, whether they're there in person or not.
I think that's reasonable.
That I can imagine would be part of any preamble anyway, just because that kind of announcement might be made in the presence of the respondent and counsel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so because it gives them a little reassurance as well.
Yeah, it would go in there anyway. And I think the reason, I guess I'll give the reason why I feel like that portion doesn't really need to be memorialized, because keep in mind this is for allowing or permitting someone to appear via technology. And it's almost like encouraging it, when I know we're not trying to encourage appearing via technology purposes. So to put that type of language in there, it's almost like this is what we're going to be doing from now on. And I think you can cover it the way Mary had described it. It goes without saying that these shade meetings, and how Kirby described it as well, these shade meetings are already confidential. So the ethics member, the person who's a member of the ethics commission, are already, you know, and all you're doing as the chair, or when you become the chair, all you're doing is just confirming with, you are vice chair, aren't you? Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, the next chair, whoever the next chair is, that is just something that goes without saying with all the preambles that go with shade meetings in the first place. So, yeah, I don't really think you really need to memorialize that.
Okay.
So. And I would encourage you to continue this discussion when you have a quorum,
yes,
so that there can be a vote taken by the commission members.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Next up is the nominating committee report, where I would normally turn to Judge McCallum, who chaired that committee for us, but alas, I guess it's not even alas, she is doing something much more joyful than giving a committee report. She's playing with a grandbaby, so I will give her committee report, and Kirby, you help me if I miss anything. So the nominating committee met, I can't remember what day, in late July?
Mm-hmm.
It was in late
July 27th, yes.
And what happened, if you remember, is that Imani Boykin, who was an Ethics Commission appointee, resigned at the end of April, which created the vacancy for the remainder of her term, which ends December 31st of this year. And then the new term for her seat begins January 1st and would go for the next 3 years.
Uh-huh.
So January 1st through of 2023 on. So our internal operating procedures has a Rule 7 that talks about the appointment of members and the nominating committee. So the nominating committee via the ethics office set out a broad solicitation for applications and resumes for the vacancies, and I guess you did more than 30 organizations throughout the community asking for interested parties to apply. Applications were due on Tuesday, July 26th by noon, and we got 10 applicants. Unfortunately, three of the applicants were disqualified because they were either current employees of the city or of, I think, the school board, the Duval County Public School System. And so we learned a lesson, which is the next time that we are in a position of seeking an applicant, we're going to make it more transparent on the application site and in the publication that we send out who's eligible, so we don't waste somebody's time filling out that application. Lesson learned. So we invited seven, the 10 of the 10, three ineligible. We invited the seven to interview. Three of them withdrew before the actual date of the interview, so we interviewed four people, and the committee chose Jamie Buller and public. We chose Jamie Buller, and that's Jamie over there, if you haven't met her yet. We can't vote on her appointment, but Thank you for coming, Jamie. And then there was another applicant who was very strong, and Kirby went ahead and talked to public defender Charlie Kofer about this gentleman because his appointee is going to be coming up, is it in January?
Yes.
Is up in January.
Yes, unfortunately, Mary Bland finishes her second term with us this end of this year, so the public defender has a new appointment come January.
Yes, and so we recommended that he consider this gentleman, whose name is William Ball, and he is, in fact, considering him. He was another great candidate, so we were blessed with many.
What's his name?
William Maul, M-A-U-L-E.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He is an attorney at the IRS here locally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You will have big shoes to fill, but he might perhaps to step into them.
I doubt it.
Yes.
I have very tiny shoes.
No.
Thank you for the compliment.
So normally we'd segue into new business now, and we would be talking about Jamie's appointment and having her appointed to the commission, and then we'd vote on it. But we're obviously tabling that because we don't have quorum. So you'll hear more about Jamie and her qualifications and her application when we next meet with a quorum, so we can talk about that. And in my vision for having that discussion, I thought that there was merit in mentioning something else, which Cherry alluded to by accident. I don't think she knew what was in my head, which is that my term as chair will end December 31st, and so too will Darcy's term as vice chair. So you'll be looking for a new chair and a new vice chair probably at our November meeting. October, November, we'll be looking to consider who might want to serve in those roles and having an election of officers. And so I wanted to plant the seed for all of you to be thinking about that, if you want to serve, if you might have an interest in serving. I understand that you don't automatically become the chair, but of course you'd be welcome to the seat if you were inclined to run.
I waste time, really.
But I don't know what is in your heart and what you want to do. I think, if I count on my fingers correctly, that I can still continue to serve for another year. I just can't serve as chair again. And I think, Darcy, you can also serve for one more year before your term is up. Is that right?
That is correct.
Is that true?
That is true.
I think that's true, that you and I each have one more year to serve. And then we will automatically roll off. Because our
next year, your term, your second term expires. Ellen, your second term, Darcy, I think, expires. And Dr. Freiberger's first term expires.
When is that exactly?
The December of next year. So you would be eligible for another three-year term.
Yes, you would be. But we've already had that opportunity. So do please think about it. I have loved being the chair. I've gotten to work really closely with Carla and Kirby. Not so closely with you, but we do interact more than we did when I wasn't the chair. Sandy and Andrea have been a joy to work with, and the committee that you mentioned, the appeals, the post-employment appeals committee, that was not laborious. I had two meetings for that. I don't want to talk about the IG selection and retention committee job. That is normally a very benign job. That was not benign this year, but those are some of the other responsibilities of the chair. And I would normally offer to talk to you more about what the role is like if you were considering it, but I'm not allowed to have these conversations with you outside of a meeting. So, but it's been a great gig, and I've enjoyed it and was happy to serve. And I think any of you would be wonderful as chair. Let's see. Well, look, we're up to something we don't have to vote on because we're skipping the establishing a standard for remote attendance, as Mary Bland told us. So the budget presentation. Do you want to tell us more about the budget?
Yes, I do. But before I transition into there, I just wanted to share with you that Ms. Buller's application and resume are in your packet. So if you'd like to peruse over those before you have an opportunity to speak with her at the next meeting, I just wanted to flag that for your attention. And we can send that electronically as well. We were remiss in not sending that out yesterday, so my apologies. Okay, so I wanted to educate you all on a number of city processes that I think are really important for you to be aware of. And one of the most important one of those is the budget process in the city. And you have in front of you in your packet at the end four different sheets that are part of our budget reports. And I'm going to go through them Specifically, as I walk you through the general process and procedure for budgets each year in the city and how the reports tie into that. So first of all, the city's fiscal year is October 1st to September 30th. So like other state agencies and other city agencies, it's kind of an odd thing. It's not a calendar year. It's not July 1st. It's October 1st to September 30th. It's an odd period of time set by Florida law. So that is the fiscal year. So we are and what the city refers to currently is fiscal year 2022, and October 1st, we will be in fiscal year 2023. So budget kickoff each year begins in early April with a all-head department meeting where you're supposed to, each of the departments are supposed to be represented and obtain here, to obtain the pertinent information for the budget preparations that year. And then after that, the budget office will send out the budget request forms, and each department or city agency is to submit their budget request forms back to the budget office by early May of each year. And we work internally to do that. We prepare off of last year's budget each year. And once you complete your budget forms and submit them to the budget office in May and June works to prepare a budget request for each department or agency for review by the Mayor's Budget Review Committee, which is affectionately known in the city as MBRC. And so each department and agency will be scheduled for a meeting before MBRC. They're all day, and they schedule back to back to back. And so that typically happens. MBRC typically convenes their reviews in mid to late June of each year. And this year we went, the ethics office, went before MBRC for our budget on June 23rd, 2022. And our budget this year request was essentially the same as last year. The only change that we had was requesting additional $630 for dues that were related to the new ethics attorney position. They are required to be a licensed attorney, so we wanted to make sure we covered their bar dues, and also we wanted to provide them dues for a professional ethics organization. So we asked for that. So MBRC on the 23rd did review our budget and approved it, and rolled our request for the additional $630 into this current fiscal year 2022 so that it did not appear as an enhancement or additional request for fiscal year 23. So that was very nice of them. We appreciate their support in doing that and approving our budget. And then after that happens, just to give you an idea of what MBRC is looking at and what these budget reports are, they're in front of you. So the first page is titled City Council Review Revenue Detail by Account. So this talks about revenue contributions to the ethics office budget. And I'm going to skip over the first column that says current year actuals. And our budget contributions from the independent authorities is $53,500. So that's their contribution. The JEA is the lion's share of that at $25,000. Then there are a handful that contribute $7,000. And PFPF is new this year, and they contribute $2,500. And they have agreed to that was what they contributed this year. The $67,500 is actually an accounting error, but it was $53,500 this year, and they've agreed to contribute $53,500 next year. That's the first sheet that you have. Then the next sheet is the one titled Departmental Expenditures by Accounts. And you see that these are grouped into various categories: salaries, pension costs, employer-provided benefits, internal service charges for the copier, for OGC fees, for mailing room, those for our space, our office space, insurance costs and premiums, professional and contractual services, and then other operating expenses. And finally, capital outlay. So this is generally our expenditures and what they're going to be budgeted at and what the mayor's recommended and the change in percentage. And really the only thing that the ethics office has control over or can submit a request that relates to is in the second to last category, the other operating expenses on the bottom of page one and top of page two. Everything else is generally set by the budget office based on actuarials and other costs in the city. Unless we were to hire somebody, and then that would change, obviously, the salary depending upon the range that was posted for it. But that typically stays the same or there might be added, the amount may increase each year if there, for instance, is a cost of living adjustment that's been granted or negotiated. And recently, when the mayor did collective bargaining last year, they had some extra funding come in from the local option gas tax that passed the city council, so he negotiated pay raises across the board for city employees. So last year, this fiscal year, we got 3%, and the next 2 or 3 years, we'll each get 2.5%. But under other operating expenses, that's the category that we can largely request additions to or changes to, and primarily the ones that we operate out of are travel expenses, office supplies, furniture on rare occasion, dues and subscriptions, and then employee training. So it's a small category, essentially, that we can have control over. And typically, our training expenses are about $2,700. And this year, we had the great honor of having Andrea selected for the Leadership Jacksonville class this year. And so we went before the Mayor's Budget Review Committee a couple of weeks ago, and we asked to transfer some money we had saved from the vacancy and the attorney position and put it into training to cover her Leadership Jacks dues for leadership training. And they granted that request. So this year, our training will increase by $4,500, which was the amount of her dues. But congratulations to Andrea for that.
Congratulations.
The next budget report you'll see is a summary of the employment positions in the office, the full-time employment positions in the office. So you have the ethics program and training manager, which is Andrea. It's currently filled. You have her salary there. You have the attorney two, which is vacant. And that's the designated salary with benefits, the current one. And then you have your executive director, me. It's filled, and that's the salary with the benefits. So those are the detailed budget reports that are prepared and that are reviewed by MBRC. And once you go through MBRC and the mayor will put together his proposed budget to present to council, and he may or may not make adjustments to department's budgets, and we were very fortunate he did not make any in ours except for adding in the 630, as I mentioned before. And so once that happens, then the City Council Finance Committee will convene in early August and start their budget hearings. And then each department and agency is scheduled for budget hearings before the Finance Committee. We and the Ethics Office went before Finance Committee on August 12th for our budget hearing, and it went really well. And as part of the City Council budget review process, the City Council Auditor does, this is the final page that you have in your packet, does a summary of the various accounts, the revenues and the expenditures, and what the increases are, or if there's decreases, and just does an overview summary. And then if they have any questions or recommendations, they'll list them. But as you see here, they had none. And our budget hearing went well, and in particular, Councilmember Carlucci was incredibly complimentary of the Ethics Commission and the important work that they do in the city, and he wanted me specifically to share with you his support and dedication to the commission and to let you know that if there's anything you all ever need, he's more than happy to assist in whatever way that he can.
Thank you for letting us know that.
And then the final step is the council votes on the entire city budget at the end of September, and it goes into effect October 1st. So any questions about the budget and how it's prepared and what we do? And
no, that was a very thorough summary. Thank you.
Yeah, understandable. Thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Congratulations, Andrew.
Yes.
Yes. You'll enjoy it.
Excellent. Okay. Next up on our agenda is ethics training, which is also Kirby.
Okay. Wonderful. And this is the final substantive topic that we have prepared for you. So as part of the code, the Ethics Commission does have a duty to evaluate and help develop the training in the city. And also, you all need to be trained as well. I last trained you last summer on a handful of topics, but because we had Ms. Bowler joining us today, and she will be hopefully a new member of the commission, and because we do like to try to keep your training current, we also wanted to share with you a sample of some of the trainings we've done. And so we have a compilation here on three quick topics for you.
Thank you.
Normally, when we do training, we do try to tailor it to the group that we're training and the duties that they have and the functions that they serve. For purposes of this, we actually grabbed slides from other trainings because we wanted you to see what we were doing for other groups, but it is also applicable to some of the things that you do.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. So typically we'll include an agenda, and so we'll discuss the purpose of the training, and in this particular one, we're going to talk about the importance of ethical leadership, and then I'm going to briefly explain the city's ethics program, and then we get to the most common ethics topics, and for the one that we're using as the sample mostly for today was for the ECAs, the Council Executive Council Assistants that we did in May. So... we like to start always our trainings with the purpose of government ethics for two important reasons. Number one, it helps to set the context and background of why we have the laws. Research does actually show that if people can understand the reasoning and the purpose behind something, they're more likely to follow the process or the rules. So we do try to do that. And the other reason we always start with the purpose is because government ethics is very counterintuitive at times to personal ethics. So government ethics is about the independence of the institution. Personal ethics is about really good character traits, honesty, trustworthiness, hard work. And sometimes the right decision from a government ethics standpoint is counterintuitive to what we would do from a personal standpoint. They're like apples and oranges, so we do set the table for that discussion as a framework. So the purpose of government ethics is to increase trust in government. It's supposed to be of the people, by the people, for the people. That's how it's supposed to work, right? That was what our founding document said. And so that is truly the purpose. It's to do that and also to prevent government officials and employees from benefiting from their office. So we like to kind of get a feel for what the thoughts and thinking are of our participants. And so we often will start with real life scenarios. We'll ask them, if you were a taxpayer and you read about this article in the paper, how does it make you feel? Are you okay with it? Are you having issues with it, or do you not know? So the first slide on the left-hand side is a story that hit news for Jax several years ago about a top official in FDOT that used her agency employees to clear debris at her home during work hours. So they were using agency hours and agency equipment to clear, you know, a personal issue for her at home. So we asked people how they feel. Almost unanimously, they'll say that they have a problem with that. The slide on the right talks about a former county judge here in Duval County who was issuing marriage licenses to people that were applying for one, and he was providing an extra copy to them for a charge. But he was personally pocketing the extra money from that. And it totaled about $2,100 of his salary over 50 years ago. So it was over 10% of his salary that he was earning. It was pretty significant. And the third paragraph said, asked if he saw anything wrong about using county employees in an operation that amounted to personal business. The judge said he did not. You can be assured if I saw anything wrong, I would not be doing that, and my employees wouldn't be doing it if they thought anything was wrong. But when we poll people unanimously, they will tell us that they do see an issue with this, that they're not okay. So we say, well, why do these things happen? Why do you read about them? And why was the judge saying that he didn't see anything wrong with it? And the research will tell you it's because of our innate self-serving bias that we have. So we have this inner dialogue that subconsciously that we're not even aware that if we were to look at ourselves in the mirror, we see ourselves as superheroes. We see ourselves in the best possible light, and we often don't perceive danger situations that we can find ourselves in, which can lead us astray and push us towards personal interests. We all have that self-serving bias. I have it, you have it, everybody, because it's part of the innate nature. So we do try to advise people of that. And then as I alluded to before, we also let them know that there is a big difference between government ethics and personal ethics. And if you try to apply personal ethics to your service as a government employee or official, you might run astray in some of the areas. Here are some examples of helping a relative find a job with nepotism issues potentially for government employees and officials, and also accepting gifts. Bless you. For board members, the biggest example of this is the Sunshine Law. Bless you. So it is a common practice, and it is a best practice in business and your personal life. If you're going to go into a meeting to be prepared, and what do? You brainstorm with other people that are going to be in the meeting to make sure you've thought things through. You come prepared. You do the risk-benefit analysis, and you can be educated and speak intelligently about topics in the meeting. If you were to do that with your fellow board members, you, of course, would be violating the Sunshine Law. And so the Sunshine Law sounds so easy on paper, but you put it into practice and it's counterintuitive. And almost always, it's something that's inadvertent. Nobody directly sets out, except a couple of examples we'll show you, to actually violate the Sunshine Law. It's just something people are engaged in a conversation, and then they're talking about what they have in common, which is often their board service. Okay. So then we also like to talk about the historical development of ethics laws. So we will poll on this question and ask people to tell us when they think the ethics laws were first established. And we give them a range of answers that can be from the founding of the country, after Watergate, 1980s, early 2000s, and so on and so forth. And hardly anybody picks the founding of the country. But this historical example is actually the first gift law that was ever passed. And it was passed during the Revolutionary War time, when Benjamin Franklin was an ambassador to France. And his job as the ambassador to France was to develop a close relationship with the king of France so that France would support the colonists in their war with Great Britain. And Mr. Franklin did that very well. He was accepted as a member, if you will, of the French aristocracy, and the king was very, very fond of him. And France did, in fact, provide lots of support to the colonists during the war. And when it came time for Mr. Franklin to return to the United States, the king of France bequeathed him with this beautiful diamond-encrusted snuff box with a picture of the king of France in the middle. It has 109 diamonds. So Mr. Franklin was very proud of receiving such a lavish gift. And he came back and he was doing, if you will, a show and tell with his colleagues in Congress. And what do you think they felt about it? What did you think? If you were in Congress, how would you react to that? Excellent. It's a gift for his public service. They were absolutely outraged. He was amassed so much wealth just merely from his public service. That was one thing. They were also very concerned that his loyalties would lie with France and not the United States. Or worse yet, that France would expect something in return, a quid pro quo, if you will, from the United States. And so they said, you have to give it back. And he said, I can't give it back. That would be a personal affront. So not only is this a historical example of the ethics laws, the first one founded, it's also a great example of the tension and conflict between personal ethics and government ethics. So from a personal ethics standpoint, Mr. Franklin should keep the snuff box because he wouldn't want to offend the king of France. And if he were to return it, he could be offended and stop support of the colonists. That would not be good. From a government ethics standpoint, he shouldn't personally benefit from his service on behalf of the United States, and he could be compromised. So they did actually reach a compromise and allowed him to keep the snuff box in his possession so long as none of the diamonds were removed, and that worked really well until his daughter inherited the snuff box. And then you can sort of see in the picture that a lot of the diamonds on the outer ring and the top were removed, and by the early 1900s, all of them were removed. This box currently sits in a museum in Philadelphia, and some of the diamonds actually have been obtained. But that's also why we have the emolument clause in the Constitution, was because of this example. So then we will pivot and we'll talk about the city's ethics program. And our program, well, let me back up by saying nationwide ethics and compliance programs are built on recommendations and the federal sentencing guidelines. So you might remember in the late 80s and early 90s, there was a significant amount of fraud in WorldCom and some of the other major companies at the time. And the United States government started prosecuting the company, not just the officers, for the fraud and the corruption. And so as a result of that, there were some guidelines developed in the federal sentencing guidelines of that would demonstrate the company's culpability or the organization's culpability in that. And from that sprang a recommendation that corporate organizations should have institutionalized ethics and compliance programs. So that's what started them in the late 80s, early 90s. And it's now grown into a national model, and there are two primary ethics organizations at the national level. One of them is Ethics and Compliance Initiative, ECI, and in 2015, they convened a panel of academics, practitioners, which were E&C ethics and compliance officers in Fortune 500 companies, some of the interns that were studying this at ECI, and some of the consumers or stakeholders that would be impacted by the program. And they had this round table panel that developed this report called Principles and Practices of High Quality Ethics and Compliance Programs. So it gave a whole detailed list of if you have a high quality program, based on the federal sentencing guidelines, here are the things that you have. And the reason these programs are important is because research shows that organizational compliance and ethics programs that are strong and the strong ethics culture ensure and sustain integrity in your organization's performance and also reduce the risk of wrongdoing by 36%. It's pretty significant. Next, Andrea. So that is what we base our city's model off of. So then the next thing we talk about is ethical leadership, and I just talked about this, that it can also improve employee performance by 36%, reduces safety incidents up to 59%, and enhances employee engagement by 6 times. And so we'll ask, based on the research, what the trainees think is the biggest factor in setting the tone for ethical behavior and culture in the workplace. So which one do you think it is, 1 through 5?
Three.
Three? One? Anybody else?
Two.
Okay, so a divergent viewpoint, which is often what we get in the responses. Andrea, next slide. It's number one. 77% of working adults cite the behavior of their direct supervisors and management as setting the tone. So oftentimes that's the target population that we're addressing, managers and the city or in some of the independent agencies. So we want them to know how important they are in establishing the ethical culture. Next slide, Andrea. Okay, we've covered some of this, but keep going.
Okay. Skip this part or?
Huh?
Do you want to keep this part or skip?
Yeah, that's fine. So Carla, years ago, when she was researching as a fellow at Harvard, looked at all these programs, ethics programs in the country, and she figured out that ethics programs can fall into 3 different categories. You can be a lapdog, where you look good on paper, kind of like an Enron. Enron actually had an award-winning national recognized ethics program, but the culture inside didn't match the culture outside. You could be an attack dog, ready to pounce on every technical violation and do gotcha and be the ethics police, or you can be a watchdog, which is more like a safety patrol, trying to educate and train and make sure the rules are followed. So Carla did a great job of establishing and building the foundation of the office as a watchdog to assist people. And then we include our helpline and our staff. So that's going to bring us to the main topics. And we have 3 brief topics for you today. We're not going to take too long. The first one is sunshine and public meetings. Because that's always so. I told you that most of the sunshine issues that we see appear to be inadvertent because it's easy for people to talk about what they have in common. And rarely do you ever find someone that's trying to violate the sunshine, except as what happened in Sebastian City Council. So they waited until the city was closed, and then they convened a city council meeting by themselves with no one else there.
It's so crazy.
It is really crazy. So two of them were convicted, found criminally responsible in violation of the Sunshine Law, and they were sent to jail. They got 90 days to 180 days in jail, and they were fined pretty significantly. Yes, Ellen.
How come only two?
I think those were the two that were the ringleaders, as I remember. They were organizing the whole thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's like everybody got different levels of...
culpability.
Yeah, the book thrown at them.
More people got consequences.
But yes, those were the big two. But those were the two big ones that were highlighted. Yeah. Okay, so as a reminder, the Sunshine Law covers any communication between two or more members of the same board, so any communication between you and another member of the Ethics Commission on a matter that could possibly come before the commission in the future. That communication has to be in a notice meeting and able to be heard by the public. Yes?
The emphasis on any, because you mean a text message, a phone call, a chat in the hallway.
Correct. I mean, any. Yeah, that's why we have communication, and the emphasis is on any because of that. And oftentimes, issues might arise when people are walking into a meeting or they're walking out, because what they have in common is what's going to happen at the meeting. And it's very natural human instinct to want to talk about that. Very natural. It's very hard. I mean, the Sunshine Law is very counterintuitive. It's a lot harder than it sounds like it is on paper. Right. But people might think it applies only when they're in a meeting, but that's not true. It applies to anything. Text, emojis, winks, nods. Anything, any type of communication. We get a lot of questions about group tours. Like, our board wants to go on the river taxi for a tour. And we're like, no, can't do that. Florida courts have held that not all the public can be on the boat at the same time or attend the tour or whatever it is. So tours, by and large, are deemed to be a violation of the Sunshine Law, and you can't do that. And also, staff shouldn't be acting as a go-between and sharing information between Ethics Commission members or board members. And both boards are good about not asking that. Yes?
Thinking about what you said about the group tour, we've had holiday parties before in a public place. What are your thoughts about that?
That's a great question. And we do get questions about that because the Sunshine Law doesn't prohibit you from... communing with one another, right, and having personal activities. You could go to lunch together. You could have a holiday party. But I don't know if you'll remember, when we do have holiday parties, we always start with, remember, you are not in a meeting. This has not been noticed. Do not mention the following words. And we'll give you a list of buzzwords to avoid saying, just to set the parameters for that. So you got to just stay far afield from what you have. And luckily at our parties, our holiday gatherings, that typically include other people not on the commission. And so there are other people to be as buffers and kind of make sure the conversation stays on a personal level and doesn't delve into the commission level. This is a huge hot topic about Facebook chatting and whether or not it breaks the Sunshine Law. And so this was an example back when there was a Lake Okeechobee, and there was a discussion about the reservoir break happening between some members of the South Florida Water Management District Advisory Board on Facebook. It happens more than you know, and so we try to tell people, do not engage on Facebook. Just don't post anything about your board on Facebook. Or if you do, just don't respond to anybody else. So next. Okay, Yes, you can skip that one. Okay, so we also try to make our training really practical. And to Ellen's point about, you said any communications that have to do something that happened in the hallway, yes. So we wanted them to know, what would you say if your council member asked you to find out from another ECA how a different council member is planning to vote? This is using the staff as a liaison and hallway conversations, because we try to, as best as we can, replicate real-life scenarios through the training so that they will be prepared to act in the event they find themselves in a circumstance or training in a situation that they didn't necessarily think about, then they will at least have a basis to act. It's sort of like a fire drill, if you will. Okay, next. Okay, next topic is public records, and this has been a really hot topic recently, particularly with text messaging and here locally, and we're going to go over an example. But as a reminder, public records, every document that you have connected to your Ethics Commission business has to be preserved and made available for upon request for inspection and copying. So make sure you're backing everything up or you're turning it into the ethics office at the end. Be careful sometimes if you have digital files, they can get corrupted or they can get hacked and they can get deleted, and you are the custodian of that record. So just be mindful of that. Public records, it's the content of the document that determines it, not the location. So even if it's on your personal phone or a laptop or in your personal email or a text message, if it relates to commission business, it's going to be a public record. So there is a misperception sometimes about text messaging. And some people think, oh, they're transitory, they're limited, their values of limited duration. That's basically what transitory means. And so because they're transitory, they don't have to be kept. And that is a major myth and misconception. And that played out recently in a case in Nassau County where there was a dispute between the Nassau County Board of Commissioners and Rayonier. So Rayonier is doing a large development up in Nassau County, and the county had greenlighted it and permitted it, and then there was a dispute as to who was going to pay for the recreational facilities in that development. So Rayonier sued the county and to enforce what they thought was the agreement for the county to pay for the recreational facilities. And in the course of that litigation, Rayonier did a broad public records request and asked them for all kinds of documents relating to the litigation and the fight between the county and Rayonier, including text messages. And they were provided a handful of emails and said no text messages existed. That was the response. Shortly after that, in that same year at the end, the county attorney ended up firing the county manager. And when he did, the county manager produced 147 pages of text messages between the county commissioners, the county attorney, and him that directly related to Rayonier, the development, and the litigation. Needless to say, that did not sit well. Will you go back real quick? With the judge and Rayonier. And the judge actually granted summary judgment to Rayonier, finding that the county did not turn over these 147 pages of text messages, and found essentially the county violated the public records. And as a result of that, there was a referral, next slide, to the state attorney's office, and the state attorney found that there was criminal conduct by the Nassau County attorney. And why? How? He was instructing his commissioners to delete the texts and to set their phone, which you can do, to delete every 30 days. And because he said they were transitory. And so he was not indicted, but there was a report, a public report issued, finding him in violation of the law, essentially, and he ultimately resigned. So it can have dire and serious consequences.
So does the county manager still report to the county attorney? Because that's odd.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I don't know the structure of that. And last I heard, the county attorney that got fired, he was disputing his firing because he said he got fired because he refused to delete those messages.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that's why he turned them over. So I don't know what happened with that, and I don't know about the reporting structure, but that's a great question. And so we did include for the ECAs, because this is a hot topic, a directive and instructions developed by the city council secretary as to how they can make sure they're maintaining their text messages. This was also an issue in JEA. Mr. Zahn had his phone set to delete his messages every 30 days.
Do you want us to?
And said it was a factory setting. No.
I follow the rules. I grabbed my phone as soon as I saw that slide.
All right, lastly, really quick, is gifts.
Ellen, your phone probably is not set.
You have to select 30 days. It is not a factory setting. It comes by the factory and by the manufacturer to keep them. Okay. You have to specifically check otherwise.
Yes. Plus, I will tell you the number of text messages I have that have Ethics Commission business in it. That would be zero.
Yeah. That's good. All right. Last topic is gifts. And we know that you all probably don't receive a lot of gifts for being Ethics Commission members. But that's actually not the law. It's the reason that somebody, well, I was going to say, the reason somebody gives you a gift is immaterial. That's only partially true. What I mean is, you all are financial disclosure filers, and if you are given gifts over $100 by somebody that's not a relative, not a vendor of the city, and not a lobbyist, you have to report them on your Form 9 gift disclosure. So Mayor Payton, when he came into office, he was single. He got married when he was in office, and he had to report all of his wedding gifts on his Form 9. Oh, thank you. So Andrew's bringing it up. So your Form 1 is due July 1st. You all know that. You've all done it. Yay, you. We appreciate your compliance with that and the fact we didn't have to chase you to get them done. That's really important. We spend a lot of time, Sandy can attest, to chasing a lot of other people. And then, of course, you file Form 9 quarterly gift disclosures if you do get those gifts over $100 every quarter for the prior quarter. There was something, yeah, what, the pictures?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So just as a, you can go the, just to set the table again as a reminder, you can't accept any gifts over $100 from a lobbyist or a vendor of the city, and also you can't solicit anything from anybody because that could be a violation of a different law, a solicitation law. And you got to be aware of any gifts that are received when official action is being anticipated in the future. They might pin that to you like, oh, you should have known they were only giving that to you because you were going to vote on such and such, which I know that you all, that's not going to apply to you all. Next, yeah, so here are two examples of gifts that came up recently for council. And the first had to do with the city's bicentennial celebration. And they were given this nice little gift bag, and they had this hat, this coffee, this koozie, some pins, commemorative pen, some stickers, and a couple of tickets. So what do you think the value of that bag is?
What were the tickets for?
One of the events at the Bicentennial.
The VIP section.
Yeah, the tickets probably pushes you for $100.
I'm going to guess $125.
Okay, excellent. So when they got this, a lot of council members or their ECAs thought it was under $100. Like, look at this gift bag. Are you kidding me?
Oh,
but yes,
gosh.
The value of this bag, Andrea, was?
$120?
$120. Very good.
Mary Bland.
Great job, Mary Bland. That's exactly right. And it was the ticket, the ticket that actually did push it over. And they're like, well, what do I do? Can I keep the hat but give back the coffee? Can I keep the coffee but give back the bag? It was a lot of can I do this but not that. Some of them returned them. Some of them paid. And actually, some of them did return it, but it came from the city. The city was a sponsor of the Bicentennial Celebration. And as part of the city's sponsorship contract with the Historical Society and the Bicentennial Committee, the city was to receive these bags for their officials. So the city contracted for it and paid for it, so it was okay for them to take it. But some decided not to take it.
It would be hard to know that it was a gift from the city.
Yes, it was very hard to know. It just showed up one day. It's not, there's no description, there's nothing.
It showed up the same day as some other tickets that were also worth like hundreds of dollars that were from a vendor. Stuff. So both of these things randomly show up. No one knows who they're from. So
it was a lot of work. It was 3 days of work in the ethics office to run this down. Who gave it? What was the value of each? How much did it cost? What do you do with it? Do you report it? Do you accept it? Do you give it back?
Yeah, and if you take the $400 tickets and you go, the event was like the next day. If you go, and then it's an illegal gift, which it was, then you have to pay back
$300. That's what I was literally going to ask. If I wanted that bag, do I have to pay $100 for it, and then I can pocket
$20.
Right, or you'd have to pay $20,
oh,
which
that's
is
right. I have to pay
which
$20.
Is this next example we're going to share with you. This customized groundbreaking shovel from the Jags appeared magically in city council chambers as a thank you gift for the Lot J development that they approved. What do you think? So the Jags are absolutely a vendor and a lobbyist of the city. They're one of the biggest. So what do you think is the value of this shovel?
$80.
Okay. That's pretty good. Priceless. All right. $80. Priceless. Anybody else?
$200.
Good, Cherry. Anybody else?
It doesn't look that valuable to me.
It doesn't look that valuable to you.
$40, I'd say.
Right. Exactly. And that's what they all thought. No way is this shovel over $100. This shovel, the Jags say, cost $113.
Dang.
So now you're a council member. You've gotten an unsolicited gift. And you have a quandary. Do you return it and risk offending the Jags, who are one of the biggest contributors to campaigns in the city, big donors, big vendor, big lobbyist?
It has has the city seal on it.
It has the city seal on it. That's a great question. That's a great pickup, Cherry. I'm not sure how that happens.
And it was left in city council chambers?
It was left in the offices upstairs.
So could they keep it if they paid $13 back?
Excellent. Yes, sir. You pass the ethics training with an A-plus gold star. If they paid,
I think
it was $112, but I made them pay $13 if they were keeping it, so it was below $100, and they didn't get caught in the quandary of how much they paid back and whether. So, interestingly enough, half of them gave it back, and half of them paid the $13. And then we had a couple that said they wanted it and then decided they didn't want it, and then some didn't want it, and then all of a sudden they wanted to pay it later, and they had to arrange for a courier to come pick them up. Again, this was like a multi-day affair in the ethics office to run this down and figure out everything. So gift laws can be tricky. Appearances can be difficult.
So
yes?
What obligation, if any, does the liaison vendor have? Like, should not the Jacksonville Jaguars be familiar with our rules and know better than to give someone a gift that was over $100?
That's a great question. And actually, pursuant to the code, Section 701B, the Jaguars, as a vendor and the lobbyist, are prohibited from giving gifts over $100 to city employees and officials. So we will definitely be having that dialogue again with the Jags. Yes, they should be familiar with it. This has come up before, but, you know, I'm sure that's not first of... With all the business they have to do, I'm sure that's not the first in their mind.
Sanction for that, because it's, I mean, there's no possibility of any real sanction for that, is there?
Meaning for sanction for what? Oh, for
overstaffed what they shouldn't have done.
That's a great question. Is there any sanction for the Jags if they violate the ethics code? Presumably.
Which they did.
Which presumably somebody could file a complaint locally, the commission could hear it, and then they could try to decide if there was action to be taken, which is really interesting because most of the remedies that the ethics commission can impose or the consequences the ethics commission can impose are about like reprimands and fines and maybe recommending discipline. So that is sort of interesting of how does that meld up with the other ones.
Mull that one over.
Yeah. That's a good thing for the legislative committee to mull over. So that in a nutshell is a sample of our training, but also a little bit of a dive to you and some of the hot topics that might apply to you as board members as well. So any questions about the training?
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. That is honestly the highest compliment. When somebody leaves a training and was like, that was fun, I learned something. And one of the council members said that this year. She was like, that was so much fun, I really learned. And I said, thank you.
So switching back to our agenda, any public comments? any announcements? Anything going on that people want to announce? No? Anything we want to share? Hearing and seeing none. LaTanya, do you have anything for us?
I have nothing. It was a really great presentation. Thank you, Kirby.
Thank you, LaTanya.
Thank you. So then the meeting is adjourned. It's, what time is it? 5:54. Not bad. For Don.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you, everyone.
Tanya. Okay. And it is 6 minutes to spare.
All right.
I don't know. Are you recording something?
Thank you, Kirby.
Thank you.
Where did Carla go?
She apparently went upstairs.
I was surprised she didn't stay. Yeah,
she snuck stay. Out. Thank you. I'll Jamie be thinking about your son.
Good to see you, too.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We'll see you in the next meeting.
Hi, I'm Mary Lynn. Nice to meet you, Jamie. And you're welcome to the board.
I'm going to run if you don't need me.
I was like, I shouldn't have taken that.
That was great to sit through.
Hey, Sandy, Miss Fuller files for her other board, so she's good. Just remind me.